you know, started out as a weekly show years back, many years back, and then I don't know, maybe 4 years ago or something, we went to every day of the week, and then Matt Shea has Tuesday, Thursday, and I have Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 4 to 5, and then it replays every night from 9 to 10 on the American Christian Network. Coins Plus is a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. That means we offer every niche, whatever you want to call it, that is affiliated with coins, diamonds, jewelry, things like that. People come in looking for diamonds. We don't have a crazy display. We keep our diamonds in a vault. And when you want to look at them, we discuss them. We will bring stuff out and show you. People come in. I had someone here recently expecting us to have this huge display of diamonds. I think if you just think for a moment of the value of diamonds and how compact and small they are, you can quickly answer why we don't display them that way. We keep them locked up, and then when we want to actually talk about them specifically, we'll bring them out and help match your needs. I can tell you, if you know, as far as getting the right diamond at the right price, no one can beat us. One thing you got to be really careful of, and I didn't intend to go here, but it's a quick education. You can buy diamonds that are not certified, or you can buy them that are certified. Either way, it doesn't change the diamond. The diamond is what it is. But where you can get in big trouble in diamonds and coins, and don't let me over confuse you or scare you into thinking this is a real complicated concept. There are major, respected, legitimate, you know, we call them grading services, certification services, whatever, for diamonds and coins. Coins, it's PCGS and NGC. In the past, there were a few others that aren't around anymore, but those are the two majors. In diamonds, it's GIA only. There's many other grading agencies like EGL and other ones. I was dealing with a young lad lately. Of course, we deal with a lot of young people getting married. And he was looking at GIA stones. And the next thing I know, he's got, and I've run into this multiple times. Jewelers apparently will intentionally deceive. They will quote a stone, and it's hard to explain this because I know a lot of you don't understand. But when it comes to diamonds, color, cut, clarity, and carat weight affect the value. The color of the stone, pure white on white diamonds is most desirable. Of course, there's colored diamonds. There's pinks and blues and greens, and we have some of that in stock as well, which are pretty. They're usually smaller because they're hard to get. They're kind of rare. But on white diamonds, you got color, which starts at D and goes up from there. And I won't get into that. But there's color and clarity. The clarity is how many inclusions are in the stone. You're not going to get a flawless stone unless you're going to spend a tremendous amount of money. But most of the inclusions that we sell they're not visible to the naked eye. You got to pull out a 10-power loop to find them. My point is this. I'm seeing more often two things happening. One, people are getting presented a diamond as a grade that is better than it is. And then oftentimes a certificate from a company that is not GIA, the Gemological Institute. And they get confused and they think they've got a GIA stone and they think they're getting it cheaper than is even reasonable or whatever. That's why you got to trust who you deal with. It's very important that you really know and trust who you're dealing with. I mean, that's probably the simplest way to put it. But if it sounds too good to be true, it is. Diamonds, gold, coins, whatever. Good quality product has a liquid, hard wholesale price. That is what you need to understand. There's people that will literally think that they can buy gold at half price, like everything else. Like if you wait around long enough at your favorite store, You just might see that coat or shirt or whatever, camping gear, doesn't matter. If you wait around long enough, you just might see it on sale, things like half off. The reason they can do half off is because there's a tremendous markup. In gold and silver and coins like that, there's not a tremendous markup. There is a hard asset liquid price. If gold is $1,300 today, a 1 ounce American Gold Eagle is going to be trading at about, 4.5 to 5% over that, or, it depends on quantity and all that. But in general, if gold's $1,300 an ounce, 5% over that is going to be $65. So you're going to be paying $1,365. That does not mean that we make 5%. As a matter of fact, our cost is about 3.5% over. So when you're buying metals and coins, there's two numbers that you may hear if we're in a deep conversation. One is the margin and one is the premium. The premium is how much over spot an item costs you. The margin is what's the difference between the buy and sell price. So an even simpler example, say gold's $1,000 an ounce, just because it's a nice round number to work with. If we're selling gold at 5.5% over or whatever, and a gold eagle, there's items that are cheaper, but if you're selling a gold eagle, just say at 5% over and buying it back at 3% over, we're making 2%. We're making $20 on $1,000 roughly. But the premium you're paying is 5% over. You're paying 5% over spot. That doesn't mean that you're going to get spot back out of it. The spot price, it's a form of measurement. And there's different coins with different premium spreads. The smaller the gold coin, the smaller the fraction, the higher the premium you're going to pay. And that's just the way it is. People wonder why. I think it's typically because the smaller pieces of gold are typically reserved for those who can't afford the larger piece. And I suppose the price structure is designed that way. One, because there's less of them, and it takes more of them to make an ounce of gold. And so there's a higher demand per se. And two is, I guess it's just transaction costs. So it's important to understand that. So basically, and the other thing too, is I'll get people that'll want, like American silver eagles. They want to buy silver, but for some reason, there's all this marketing out there for American silver eagles. Those are $1, 1 ounce silver coins made by the U.S. Mint, okay? People get this idea by going on the internet. And I've tried to explain that every single thing now that you see on Google or wherever you go is literally paid for. We have hit an era now where absolutely everything you see is paid advertising in one form or another. It may not look like it, but it may be informational, but it's paid. There's ads popping up all around it. So you have to be really careful about what people are pitching you or telling you. And the reason that they sell American silver eagles is because the premiums are very high, okay? They're very, very high, and I would not recommend them if you're looking to invest in silver. They're just too darn high. For example, silver eagles, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me right now, but hypothetically, ballparky, they'll be trading as much as like $3 an ounce over the silver spot price. And that's, like I said, that's just a ballpark estimate. I don't have specific. But even if it's $2.75, when silver's $17 an ounce, you're paying like 16 or 15% over or whatever it is, maybe 17%. It's too much, okay? Now, granted, when you bring that item back, we may be selling at 17% over just because that's the national market rate, and it's even what they trade for dealer to dealer, but our buyback at the time may be 7% over, so the margin on those is actually 10%. Whereas if you buy just 1 ounce silver rounds or 10 ounce bars or old U.S. silver coins, which are my favorite, your premium or your margin is only a few percent. So without getting too complicated and confusing people, just realize that there's products that you might see and you think they're neat. But if you're wanting to invest in gold or silver or things like that, you really want to make sure that you're getting the maximum amount of product for your expenditure. And that's where I say that I don't recommend people coming in and telling us what they want, because you may come in and you are absolutely convinced what you want. You went on the internet and you looked around, and the thing that you don't understand is you are not evaluating the entire universe of options. You are evaluating only what is being presented to you in an advertising fashion. It won't look like advertising, but it is. And so people come in with very firm ideas of what they want, but they really are not given the proper universe of information to make the proper educated decision. If you're buying gold or silver, obviously you want to buy a product that has a relatively low margin and premium. You don't want to pay crazy price over spot, and you don't want to have the dealer making an extraordinary amount of money on you. We don't set the premium spreads on a lot of this stuff. It's a national market. And so that's where the best thing you can do is to come in and just ask, and we'll help you. I was dealing with a guy yesterday who, you know, he had a whole bunch of Silver Eagles he wanted to sell to get money for, you know, he's refinancing a house and needs to pay off some debt. And, you know, the premium he paid for them is really exorbitant. He'd bought them somewhere else, and I'd gotten to know him a little bit. But basically, he bought them somewhere else, and he paid the big healthy premium, and he was just losing a lot of money. And then so we talked a while, and I explained to him, if you're buying silver, you want to buy silver rounds or something that's a lot more liquid. And he'd been, you know, he gave me this debate for American Silver Eagles, okay? The American Silver Eagle is a $1 face value silver dollar with an ounce of silver in it. So the silver in it's like, say right now, $17 roughly. And the retail price on them is $20. But the face value is $1. And he said, well, I like American Silver Eagles because they have a legal tender face value on them. And I'm like, what difference does that make? And he sat and he thought, and he really couldn't tell me. He just read stuff that's what they use to pitch it. And what they'll tell you sometimes is, well, with a legal tender face value, it's technically not confiscatable. Okay. Well, if you understand the confiscation took place back in the 30s under FDR, after they had basically gotten themselves in a pickle by producing so much fiat currency, Federal Reserve notes, from the creation of the Federal Reserve until the big crash of 29, they were in a pickle. They left a clause on the banknotes that said that they were redeemable either in gold or silver, depending on the denomination of the note. And they had to make do on this. They had countries like France and Switzerland coming in, watching our stock market crash and saying, that's it. We want out of American investments. We want out of the American dollar. We want to be paid in gold or silver. Well, they had issued such a high multiple of paper notes, dollar bills, fives, tens, whatever, that said it was redeemable in gold or silver. They had issued so many that they would have never, ever on earth had a close enough reserves, even remotely close enough of the metal to redeem all the notes. So at that point, the Federal Reserve was hypothetically bankrupt and a fraud. So they had two choices. One was admit it's bankrupt and a fraud, dissolve it, and go back to the system that our founding fathers clearly specified, or two, lie. So they lied. And what they did is they began for years under the Federal Reserve Act, they left that clause on the note because people would innocently and naively be returning their gold and silver to the banks, thinking that they were going to be able to get it back later in the form of gold and silver, but they were not. It was a deception. So they told people, hey, if you want to be patriotic, turn your gold and silver. And this is now about 1933 when they were in a bind with other nations. And, you know, a great number of people turned it in because at that time people were much more naive. They trusted the government. They wanted to be a patriot. We didn't have all the alternative information that we have today, which is good and bad, obviously, because I just cannot even express to you the number of people that I am talking to that are becoming so frustrated with what's going on in the world. And really, the media is at the hub of it. They are just creating a little level of chaos and disrespect, and unbelievable, just really hard, tough, nasty stuff, over the top, unethical, immoral. You know, you tell me, you can use whatever adjectives you want, but it's just gotten to that point where the level of destruction and mayhem and chaos and disrespect is just, it's sad. It's just really destructive to this nation, and it's just tearing the roots out of this country. And, you know, for years I was reading notes today of stuff I wrote when Obama was in office and all the things he was doing to tear things down, and I could have went through it, but I threw it out. And the fact of the matter is this is a progressive situation and system that continues to march on despite who's in there. Now, when Obama was in there, he knew darn good and well what he was doing, and it was all intentional. Trump, not so much, but there are some things that Trump, I think, is participating with. You got to remember, Trump's in his 70s. He's really got an 80s mindset. In other words, when he was at the peak of his game, you know, in his 30s or whatever, when he's being mostly molded and malleable, we were in the big no drug war thing under Reagan. And folks, I can tell you that the amount of civil rights that have been given up in the name of the drug war are crazy. You know, the civil asset forfeiture, there is a good reason why our founding fathers gave us the Fourth Amendment and said, you know, that protected us against illegal search and seizure. And now we are giving that up readily over things like terrorism and drugs and, you know, things like this, that they're using as red herrings to give us, not only to willingly give up our civil rights, but to beg the government to take them from us. I've heard so many people when I fly, well, as long as they keep me safe, they can do whatever they want. But folks, you never cease to be a U.S. citizen as long as you're on our soil. You don't want someone breaching the Bill of Rights in the name of fear. We've all heard the saying, and I'll repeat it again, from Benjamin Franklin, that he who is willing to sacrifice liberty for security deserves neither liberty nor security. Our founding fathers were absolutely brilliant. I had a bunch of information here that I was going to go over, and I didn't bring it. But the level of comprehension they had of freedom and the Bible and philosophy, it was just so far superior to anything that we seem to possess today. They knew it wasn't an accident that they made the specific commandments that or Bill of Rights that they did. They were so deliberate and so methodical in the construction of these that it was very, very, very important to them that these specific articles are put into the Bill of Rights, the most important section of our United States Constitution, in practice. So, reason I say that, I discuss occasionally my belief that things like the drug war and terrorism war and stuff generate a lot worse than they do good. Okay, the amount of money that is expended to get a certain amount of drugs off the street is unbelievable. In a report I read here recently that incorporated the FBI and the DEA's efforts towards confiscating drugs, okay? The cost of operations, the salaries, the income, the time, the surveillance, the vehicles, and everything. We spend $28,000 per pound of marijuana confiscated. That does not count the money spent by municipalities or local cities. But just with the Fed, with the Federal Department of DEA, Department of Drug Enforcement, and the FBI, we spend $28,000 per pound of marijuana confiscated. I don't know a lot about marijuana, but I think that a pound is probably worth a couple thousand dollars on the street. Just guessing. And I could be well off. Even I could be off by a couple thousand. I don't know. But the point is, when we're spending 7 to 10 times the value of the drug to get it off the street, something's broken. And, you know, I usually have pretty astute listeners that follow pretty well and understand that my position isn't by being against the drug war and seeing something flawed and broken in it does not mean that I condone drugs or drug use. Okay. If a system is broken, it doesn't mean that I condone whatever action it's been designed to stall or cease or, you know, or whatever, or inhibit or enforce or whatever it may be. I say this because one of my employees said somebody, a gal, called and was complaining about, you know, something I probably said about the drug war and then, you know, made some rude comments and hung up. I mean, I'm always surprised like that why we can't just have civil discourse. I mean, just, you know, we respect your opinion. Don't get angry. You know, folks, if we all have opinions, okay, but you need to be wise and you need to be peaceful and you need, you know, you need spiritual centeredness, I guess, through Christ. Because you don't agree with somebody does not mean you need to be angry or rude or, you know, flippant or things like that. We respect your opinion. I think that most of the time I'm the one that has the strong opinions here. The other employees are nowhere near as opinionated as I may be. But the point is this, they criticized marijuana and criticized me and said that somehow I was condoning blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying anything about marijuana. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying that, you know, anything. But what I'm saying is the drug war is a destructive waste of money. Okay? That's what I'm saying. The drug war has got quite a few consequences towards our society, negative consequences. And it's hurt us because when we're, you know, I'm repeating myself, but when we're giving up our civil rights, really a lot of laws are made to go after that bad guy over there, not us. We're the ones that pay, right? They make a law that says if you don't do this, you're breaking the law. Well, the problem is the criminal, he's not going to follow the new law. Only you and I are. So all of a sudden we get bound by all these rules and regulations and laws that really don't apply to us because we aren't the one that broke the law in the first place. That's one thing that's very sad. Another thing is just the level of sacrifice of our core humanity is ridiculous. We are slowly letting socialism creep in, Marxist police state, okay? We are definitely see the police state integrating itself deeper and deeper into our everyday life. And we don't even realize it. When you look at the war on drugs, you know, when you look at actually what it does and what its, you know, what its negative features are, you start to understand that it's definitely not how it's hurting a lot more than it's helping. So I guess all I'm saying on that point is if you have an opinion, great, we respect it. Also, if you listen to me on the radio, please listen. I mean, listen, don't put, you know, words in my mouth or thoughts in my mind. Just listen. I've had people call and literally accuse me of saying exactly the opposite of what I said. I had someone here recently, you guys probably heard the show on vaccinations. I actually had a lady call and tell me that vaccinations were bad and I was condoning vaccinations. The title of the show online was The Danger, you know, The Dangers of Vaccines and the Deception of Something. It was very negative. The person didn't listen. They just, and I said, well, you didn't hear the whole show. Yes, I did. No, you actually didn't. You were probably spinning through the dials. I am so opposed to vaccines. There is no study that ever shows any efficacy or safety of any of them ever. Period. They just have never done it. It's a complete sham. The drug war is a complete sham too. All the money, since the global war on drugs began, drug use has expanded steadily. Think about these things. It isn't a matter of opinion. And that's where we get so hung up. I mean, we've got our own opinions on theology and rapture and creation and evolution or non-evolution. And so when people talk, if we think it conflicts with our beliefs, we get mad. Why? Why are we afraid of someone else's opinion? And if we've got it right, we shouldn't be angry. When you find yourself getting angry when someone challenges your position theologically, you have a few issues going on. One, you're probably not confident enough about it. Two, you're probably trying to shut the person down through anger, which oftentimes is a substitute for intellect. If people don't have a nice intellectual defense of their behavior or whatever, they'll become angry because it's got certain defense mechanisms it triggers in other people. It'll trigger fight or flight in other people oftentimes. Okay, if they flight, that means they leave, the conflict's over, you technically win if you're one of the people that wants to shut communication down. Number two is it's if you get angry, you've got the fight or flight. So number two is the fight. If someone brings a big argument to the table and it gets heated, you're not even no longer debating the topic at hand. So I think it's a sign of utter intelligence. You know, you'll hear all this stuff on the news or all these editorial shows that they'll say, you know, we need a conversation about this or that. Well, there's a lot of really horribly bad ideas, immoral and everything, that the left will propose and push and say, well, we need to have a conversation. The reason they say they need to have a conversation is because you will be drawn down. The Bible says, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever you sow, you'll reap. If you reap to the flesh, you'll reap corruption, right? It also tells us, don't be deceived, bad company corrupts good morals. The bad brings down the good. That's just the way it is. So if we engage with the wrong people in arguments rather than healthy debate, we end up immersing ourselves in a high level of negativity and destructiveness. And so we need to be civil-minded and secure in our belief system and able to defend ourselves professionally, kindly, and wisely. You'll find life becomes a lot better. And you can actually take that to the next level where you enjoy it. It's actually fun. You like to talk and you like to discuss and you like to hear other ideas. It's okay. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to believe them. It doesn't mean they have to be right. It just means that you're listening. You're open-minded and you're listening. You're hearing what other people have to say. Because guess what? You might be wrong. I always say to my people, know the difference between being 99% wrong and 100% wrong. Or right. Know the difference between being 99% right and 100% right. 99% right is where you're sure you're right based on the information that you've been provided. What often happens is we make a determination on something based on information that we have at the time. We're right. And then later on, other information will come in that actually changes that whole scenario. Now, if we're wise, we adapt immediately and we follow the truth with no agenda or narrative, and we don't mind looking like we made a wrong decision or letting people know we changed our mind based on more information. That's the sign of a peaceful, wise spirit. If we get angry and we don't want to take into consideration the new information, this is where really bad things happen. When you get tyrannical leaders, for example, in North Korea, where they're torturing and beating and brainwashing and all this kind of stuff, they don't want truth and facts. And like they say, facts don't care about your feelings. They don't want facts. They operate strictly on feelings. They try to create a divine love for their leader that God gave us as a natural affection that is supposed to be addressed towards authority and leadership, but it's really supposed to be addressed towards God, not man. And that's when these governments become strictly man-run, strictly man-made. So, again, just, you know, you don't want to follow in the footsteps of a tyrannical leader. You just want to be civil-minded discourse. So on the drug thing, so since the global war began on drugs, drug use has expanded steadily. The exact outcome the war is meant to affect. There have been no official cost-benefit analyses of the war on drugs. The one that I just read you was a very simple math calculation that just calculated the amount, the number of pounds that have been confiscated of marijuana and the number of, so you got the, you know, the number of pounds and the total cost expended. It's exorbitant. It's a huge government bureaucracy, okay? I am not saying, I'll preface it again, I'm not saying I use drugs. I'm not saying I like drugs. I'm just telling you the way it is. So please open your mind's eye to understand the drug war is, it really serves no good purpose. The war on terrorism at this point in time hasn't, well, it has come to our soil, hasn't it, with the whole airplane stuff. It just keeps getting worse and worse. You could take an iPad and an iPhone and leave it in your bag. Now you got to pull it out because they get hot tips that these guys are figuring out how to make bombs out of laptops. And you know, when will it all end? I mean, I just, it's evil, it's here, and that's it. The war on drugs is the same. It creates enemies, it creates black markets, it creates violence, it creates fear, it fills our jails with people that aren't violent criminals. And people say, well, I call drug dealers violent criminals because they kill people. Well, you know, with certain drugs, you're right. But people still make a choice whether to take them or not. It really isn't the drug dealer's fault if you take drugs. I know it's fun to blame him for that, but it's just not reasonably true. It's our fault. It's our choice, and we'll be held accountable for it, legally and spiritually. We can't blame other people for our actions. So the cost of the drug war is out of control, through the roof, over the top. It leaves, there's little accountability, and there's just too much money, okay? So when you go deeper into it, think of all, you know, the money, the hundreds of billions of dollars, literally hundreds of billions, into the actual trillions, if you go back long enough and add it up cumulatively, the hundreds of billions of dollars that has been spent on the drug war could have completely transformed this nation. Obama said he was going to fundamentally transform America, and everybody said, bring it on, until they realized he was a naive, professorial socialist, meaning a professor. Everything was idealistic, but the left just adored him. He had so much appreciation, I guess, from the left that he could do no harm. Now the exact opposite is taking place, where they are absolutely going after Trump at a rate and pace that I'm confident, I know for a fact, the media has never done this before, because it's completely unacceptable and wrong. And so on. So anyway, so all that money, you know, taxpayer money, is squandered on drug enforcement, and it's diverted from other social spending measures that actually benefit citizens. So the money that's getting blown is tremendous. Mass imprisonment. I'm giving you the reasons why I oppose the drug war. And it's because, like I said, I had a kind of a phone heckler or whatever. But the thing is it's not, I'm not condoning drugs. I'm just condoning common sense. And, you know, there's, I think the lady's comment was, it makes people stupid or whatever. There's a lot of things that we could do that make us stupid. And there's a lot of us out there that don't need anything to make us stupid. We're just stupid. Okay, it's not drugs that make people stupid. It may exacerbate it. Well, I wouldn't say it's not drugs. I'm just saying the marijuana thing, if you're angry about it, I can completely relate. It's the drug you're mad at, not the messenger of information or opinions, okay? And the drug's tough. It causes problems. It's got its issues. But at the same time, since they legalized marijuana in the state of Washington, all kinds of things have gone down in Washington state since the legalization of marijuana. I'm actually looking it up. So I'm going to double check some numbers. I am told that marijuana use in high school students has dropped since legalization by 25%. So depending on different reports I've got right here, teen marijuana use is either down or unchanged, depending upon the story, the source of information, apparently, which most reporters are super biased. They get very biased information, and they can't even see their own bias. They don't even understand it, like, you know, the people in the White House. The media is just, oh, man, I just feel. So, teen marijuana use is either down or unchanged, depending on what statistics you use, but not up. Marijuana arrests, obviously, have come way down. Way, way down, because it's not illegal anymore. And a lot of the police, they're hall monitors now. They're just enforcing laws. Their attitude is, look, I don't make the laws. I just enforce them. But just as we've been given a constitutional ability for a jury to rule a case null and void just based on the basis that the law itself is unconstitutional is a really, really well-kept secret. They don't want people to know that you have that authority. And the reason I say that, police officers also have that authority to say that law is archaic, it's not accurate, it doesn't apply today. Just because the law's on the books doesn't mean they need to enforce it unless they get in a situation. So obviously marijuana arrests are way down, and which means our jail population will shrink, saving us a ton of money. The marijuana legalization appears to have had little impact on traffic fatalities. There's no statistical increase in the number of traffic fatalities. And it's very important that you understand error of variables or the potential contamination of reports like that. But the fact that it's within the standard deviation, meaning it's close enough to the old numbers that there's no detectable difference. It may be up or down, but it's up or down in such a minuscule level that that alone could be due to random chance. So we definitely need to empty out our prisons. We have the highest per capita incarceration rate for adult males in the entire world, okay? Nobody else has the percentage of adult population in prison as we do. That's because we lock people up for nonviolent crimes and things like that, where other countries just do not. So, the traffic fatalities per 100 million vehicles traveled has gone from since the legalization, it's gone from about 1.4. It actually is down. It's down to 1.2. Colorado and Washington are also down. Tax revenues have gone up because of legalization. But, you know, they make a small slice of the budget. But by the second year of legalization, marijuana tax revenues exceeded projections in both Colorado and Washington. In the most recent fiscal years, recreational marijuana brought in $129 million in taxes in Colorado and $220 million in Washington. That's a lot. There's a benefit to taxation. The other thing, folks, there's so many things that you can get bent out of shape with because you have a certain mindset of how it should be. And it's just so important that you understand that, you know, some of this stuff is just because we've been taught to think a certain way, and because marijuana's mood altering or whatever, it's bad. Well, it is. I don't agree with it. But I put my fellow neighbor, friend, brother, you know, family on a higher pedestal. You know, they're the highest priority. So the Drug Policy Alliance report did not make note of the effects of legalization, but marijuana poisonings among small children in Colorado decreased after legalization, which is interesting. The rate of adult emergency department visits for marijuana also decreased following legalization. And so we basically, it has a net positive effect. And believe me, I don't like sitting here pushing this, but it's just understand that. I mean, that's basically the message I want to get across to you, is that you understand that, you know, that there's a method to my madness. There's a reason why I believe the way I do about the legalization of drugs. So don't get mad at me. Understand me, okay? Something else I want to talk about. You know, another thing that just, I'll just talk about things at random as I have been lately. This legal immigration versus illegal. I'm so tired of the left referring to illegal immigrants as immigrants and trying to pool them in with other immigrants and saying we're a land of laws and rules. And we had the chain immigration thing where if you get one person in, each person can bring a family member, and you create this huge chain where you just end up basically everybody's related to somebody, and it all ends up, you know, going through like that. So... but anyway, so I'll go back and we'll talk again about the problems with drug war. I'll try to go faster. We have huge imprisonments of drug users. 40 years ago, 38,000 people were imprisoned in the United States for drug-related offenses, okay? 40 years ago, which would have been like, what, 1977, 38,000 people were imprisoned for drug-related offenses. 40 years ago, 38,000. Now we are running as high, well over 500,000, approaching 600,000 people. So in 40 years, when the population of the United States has gone up maybe 15% or maybe even 20, the number of people incarcerated for drug-related charges stands at almost 600,000, which means it's gone up about 17 or 15 times what it was, at least 15-fold. That is not good. And if this is the drug war and all we're doing is locking everybody up, that tells you something about the law. It tells you that people in general have an innate choice whether to obey or disobey, you know. And so mass imprisonment of drugs, we covered that, and then I'll get to get on to some other points here. We've got in the reasons why I think the drug war is a failed, you know, attempt. The tax revenue from regulated drug markets with legalization is a government windfall. That's something to also, you know, keep in mind. I'll keep going here. They say becoming a criminal has never been more popular or more profitable. And they say it's simple supply and demand. So not only do criminals get paid to take on more risk, but the completely unregulated playing field of drugs allows for insane price markup. So it's not properly regulated for purity, potency, you know, nothing like this. So the Alternative World Drug Report illustrates how ridiculous this unregulated playing field cost thing can get. So while there was 413% markup from farm gate to consumer in the price of a legal drug like coffee, the percentage price markup for an illegal drug such as even like heroin can run into the multi-thousands. And so there's, you know, and it's really mind-boggling because we've all had painkillers or pain meds and stuff like that, and we get accustomed to it. But it's not, you know, when they decide to make somebody just a hardened criminal over drug use, it just, I don't know, it makes you wonder a little bit, doesn't it? So expensive drugs cause more people to commit crimes in order to fund their habits. When drugs are legalized, they get more expensive, and that leads to more crime. It also leads to the fact that they're already illegal. They're already breaking the law. What's the difference with one more little law, one break-in, one this, one that, when they basically sell their life out? See, you know, for example, cigarette smokers typically don't have to commit felonies justifying their lifestyle. However, due to insane markups of unsafe, unregulated, and highly addicting drugs, many users of illegal drugs often overprice things and cut them wrong and so on and so forth. I mean, I sound like I'm pro-drug. Don't get me wrong. I'm not. So there's the cost to the public health system of unsafe, unregulated drugs is also exorbitant. They're starting to find drugs that are cut with so many crazy contaminants. People are almost spiteful. I just don't even understand. I don't understand it. I really don't. They're cut with, you know, stuff you can't even believe. And, you know, then you add in there all the injecting, needle sharing, unsupervised and unhygienic environments that druggies hang out in, and you really increase the healthcare costs. So when they're, if they're legal, people don't have to hide them and they can get help with whatever they want. Even in Amsterdam, where prostitution's legal, you know, they have cops, they have regular checkups. It's a very thorough system that watches closely and protects the prostitutes. Totally not condoning prostitution, just telling you what happens when it gets legalized. And it is a profound concept that's worth thinking about. Poor farmers are forced by necessity into growing drug crops. Poor farmers forced by necessity into growing drug crops are ruined financially by the massive government destruction of their fields. You know, that's obviously when it's illegal. The war on drugs deters business investment in war-torn areas. I'm kind of buzzing through these. I could keep going, but it goes on and on like this. The violence perpetrated by both criminals and governments to control the illegal drug trade is devastating. You all know this. It's just the excess of profits made from the illegal drug trade is more than enough to buy influence and corrupt public officials, obviously, right, the drug dealers. The economic distortions caused by the illegal drug trade stunt long-term growth and development economically. The war on drugs criminalizes poverty and makes criminals of the poor. It basically makes the poor criminals. You know, and I could go on. The aerial fumigation, which they do, that's a favorite tool of the war on drugs. It destroys the environment when they come in and spray to kill all this stuff. And it also, if some of it gets on plants, it hurts people. It's a contaminant. It's a very bad contaminant. So there's large-scale deforestation, which is the directly results from conflicts between governments and criminal drug producers, where they literally will go in and destroy massive, massive forests in South America just to eradicate one drug dealer. I actually shouldn't say eradicate. I say relocate is more like it. But, you know, there we are. So basically, the show today went really fast. Really fast. I'm very short on time. This is probably one of the fastest days I've ever recalled. I'm going to tell you folks right now, the Dow is going crazy. It's a wildfire. It's a summer fire. Do not dump your money into this thing. This is the time to buy into metals and coins and do a hard asset portfolio. You do not, everybody wants to be on a winning team. Everybody wants to have that great stock that's going to win. And it's just, it's in our nature, you know, but don't succumb to it. This is how so many foolish decisions are made. The market is high. It's scraping the ceiling. Is there more growth? Apparently, because they keep pumping fiat currency into it to prop it up. The thing you don't realize, they're not getting more investment money. They're just putting more brand new created debt-backed dollars into it, into the markets. It's all driven up artificial hype. They focus on certain stocks. They use a plunge protection team when they start to dive and so on and so forth. It's just, you need to realize that it's so much harder than you think if you're not an expert at stocks. And, you know, these self-proclaimed day traders, back when the dot-com craze was roaring, they all thought they were geniuses. Now it's over. You know, they all took a bath and they're back to their real lives. So, you know, that's that. And essentially, folks, I would just recommend secure your wealth while you can. Just don't buy into the crazy hype. And we can build you nice portfolios. You don't have to bring in a ton of money. I'm always out of time. We have put together some really neat stuff. I've got some really cool sets that if there's anybody that wants some real special stuff hand selected by myself and my father over the years, give us a call or come on in and we'll help you get some of that in your portfolio. It's hard for me to sell. So call Coins Plus 444-0044, toll free 877-TAP-COIN or through the website at coinsplus.com. And remember, we appreciate you. We are always here to answer questions. Take care. God bless. We'll see you Friday. Bye-bye.